In this video, we'll dive deeper into SQL Server Management Studio Express. And if you've been following along through the lessons in chronological order, you've already seen me as I use Management Studio Express to create databases, to write queries and stored procedures, to create diagrams, and a lot more. However, we're going to spend a little more time explaining the features of Management Studio Express, like how to perform the most common development and administration tasks, as well as a bunch of tips and tricks. So first of all, let's go ahead and start Management Studio Express. And we're greeted with the familiar Connect to Server dialog box that we've seen several times now. From here, what we can do is select the computer on our network and the instance of SQL Server that we want to connect to. Each computer can have more than one instance of SQL Server running. For example, on this computer, I have two instances of SQL Server running. They both have names. The default name for SQL Server Express when you installed it is SQL Express. However, I went through the installation process and created a second instance called Bob's Databases. And I did this perhaps to keep my data separate, to keep my development work separate from my production work, and so on. Also, depending on the selections that we made at the point when we installed or created our instances of SQL Server, we may have to select either Windows Authentication, which will use the current security context from my system, in other words, which user am I logged in as, to determine if I have access to that given instance of SQL Server and what I'm authorized to do while I'm there, or I may have set up SQL Server Authentication, in which case I would need to give a login and a password. And each instance can be configured separately, so we would have to supply these credentials each and every time we wanted to connect to one of the instances on a server that we manage. Now, to connect to Bob's Databases, I happen to know that it's Windows Authentication, which makes it very easy for me, and I'm going to select the Connect button. And you can see that in the Object Explorer, in the panel on the left-hand side, I'm able to view all the databases, set the security settings, and so on for that instance of SQL Server. At this point, if I wanted to connect to another instance of SQL Server, whether on this machine or a different machine, I can simply type it in here and select Connect, and now I'm connected within the Object Explorer to both instances of SQL Server on my local machine. Now, within my organization, I might be responsible for multiple instances of SQL Server. So having to go through that routine each and every time and remember to type in the credentials and connect to which server makes it a little bit laborious. So they gave us the option to register a server. So I'm going to select View Registered Servers from the menu. And I'm going to right-click Database Engine and select New Server Registration. And here I can define the connection properties, for example, Bob's Databases. And I can even give it a more friendly name. I may just strip that off and add a space and put an apostrophe in there and give it a description as well and test the connection and then select the Save button. Now the next time, and let me go ahead and disconnect from everything in the Object Explorer that I'm currently managing. The next time that I want to connect to a server, an instance of SQL Server on my network or on my system, I can just double click and I won't have to provide the connection information. I'll just automatically be connected. Additionally, to help manage large groups of instances of SQL Server, I can create server groups. So, for example, I can create an accounting group or accounting databases, and I can also create another group called Dev Databases, and then register different instances of SQL Server using these folders, so I can keep things kind of organized. And you can think of these registered servers as like bookmarks within Internet Explorer. They're simply shortcuts so that I can quickly work with a given instance on a given server of SQL Server. The next administration operation that I want to demonstrate is attaching to databases. And we did this already when we attached to the AdventureWorks database, I believe in some of the previous examples. And to do this, all you need to do is right-click on databases and select Attach. I'll select the Add button from the Attach Databases dialog. And then we can select which database that we want to attach to. In this particular case, we might scroll through and find, for example, adventureworks.mdf, select OK, and then select OK to attach to those databases. And now I can work with the tables and with the views and so on for the AdventureWorks database. So this makes it very convenient for me to install a database that somebody else created. I can also detach the database by right-clicking and selecting Detach from the Tasks submenu, and then selecting OK. And now I can take the database that I've been working on, in this case the AdventureWorks database, and give it to somebody else. So this came in handy whenever I was developing my website, the newest version of LearnVisualStudio.net. I would do some work on the database schema, then I would detach the database and send it to one of my employees, who then took the schema and made his modifications in it, and we kind of ping-ponged back and forth as we developed and laid out ideas for the data schema for our application. Now, it's important to note that you shouldn't just copy the database files through the file system without first detaching them. It's important that you let SQL Server know that it's no longer responsible for that file, so it closes any connection or any management tasks that it may have going on behind the scenes before you attempt to copy and send that via FTP or via email to somebody else. Now, attaching to databases is also another technique that you can use whenever you want to upgrade a database from SQL Server 7 or SQL Server 2000, and you want to upgrade them to the latest version, SQL Server 2005. By attaching to them, it'll automatically update them to the most current version. And so we're going to attach one more time, and we're back to where we were. Now, in the previous videos that we watched in this series, we showed how to design a table. For example, let's just take this person contact, right-click it, and select Modify. And it gives us a visual development environment to add and remove and alter the various columns that we define for our table. It's also a way that we can create tables from scratch. By selecting a given column, we can make changes to the column by modifying various column properties. For example, the data type, the length and precision of the data type, whether we're going to use an identity specification for a given column, whether it's nullable, and so on. And this works just fine in smaller environments for smaller projects, but sometimes you need to keep some versioning information about what changes were made to the database's structure. And so what most professional database administrators prefer to do is to script their changes. When you script a database or a table or changes that you've made, you're basically just writing to a file or to a query window a special kind of transact SQL called DDL, Data Definition Language. And you can save those scripts off into your file system or your source code management system, or you can send them via email. So let's take a look at how to do this. First of all, we're going to script out the database as a create to a new query window. We could also script it out to the file system or the clipboard, but let's go to a new query window and you can kind of see what we're talking about. So here's all the DDL that's required to create the AdventureWorks database, complete with all the options that are required to set it up correctly. And you can see that there's a number of alter statements after the original create statement up here at the very top. And while we won't take the time to discuss each of these statements or the keywords that are used to script out this database, you can see that these are all the instructions that SQL Server needs in order to recreate this database on another server so that its structure is identical to this one. Now, we can certainly make changes in here and remove or insert additional instruction sets. However, at this point, this is the instructions that are required to create an exact copy of the database structure. Now, additionally, you can script out individual tables. So here we can script a table as a create to the new query editor window, and it creates the DDL required to create a new table. So you can see that just as we were looking at previously, we could change the individual properties of the given columns. Here we're defining a column called middle name, or here's another example, maybe a better one, email address of type varchar50, some additional instructions, and make this nullable. Okay, and then there's additional instructions that are appended onto the very end of this that, when interpreted, will make an exact duplicate copy of the table structure for the person.contact table. Now, if I wanted to make a change to this table, I could make the change here in the DDL and then save that to a file and send it to the other developers on my team, or send it to the database administrator who's working on the production version. And whenever we roll out the new version of our website or our new application, those scripts can be implemented at that time and make the changes to this given table. It can also be placed in source code management, such as SourceSafe or any of the other third-party tools, so that we have a record of every change that was ever made to this table. So from that perspective, it helps us to be more careful with what changes we make to our database and to have a permanent record of those changes, so that we can start at any given point in time and then work our way forward and have a duplicate of our table structure. And while I've demonstrated how to script out a database and a table, that's probably most useful whenever you're working with stored procedures, to script them out to make changes and to apply them against the database, and then continue to test the stored procedures more. And we'll talk about stored procedures in one of the future lessons. But at this point, I also want to show you a technique for scripting out all of the objects, select tasks, and generate scripts from the submenu. This will bring open the script wizard, which will allow us to select all of the options and all of the tables or views or stored procedures that we want scripted out. And it will script them all out at one time instead of doing them each individually. So I can script off here a dozen or so. We script them to a new query window, to a file, or what have you. Here we get a summary of everything that's going to be scripted out, and then finally we hit the finish and watch the progress of our scripting operation. Okay, so let's go ahead and close this. Similarly, whenever we're working with changing the actual data that resides within our tables, we can simply right-click and select Open Table, and this will give us an Excel-like view of the data within our tables. And we can modify a given row of data right here by simply just typing in the given cells for a row and a column, and then once we make our changes, we simply have to go to the next row or a different row, and those changes will be committed to the database. We can also navigate through the rows using this little navigation toolbar, or create a new row at the very bottom of our row set. So this gives us a visual way of modifying the data in our database. But what most people prefer to do is to work in the query editor. And in that query editor, we'll write a subset of TransactSQL to do what are called CRUD operations: create, read, update, delete. They're also referred to as DML, or data manipulation language, which allows us to manipulate the actual data that's stored within the tables that we created. So let's use the query window to type up two what we'll call ad hoc queries. Just we're going to query the database just to see what's in there. Let me make sure I get the capitalization correct here. And I'm going to select the execute button on the toolbar, and what we'll see are two result sets. At the very top, we can see the result set from our first query, select star from person.address. And if we scroll down in this outer scroll bar, we'll see that there's actually a second result set that starts here for the person.contact result set. And so within each of these result sets, we can scroll through either this one or scroll through this one. And admittedly, this is not a very convenient way of being able to view the results. So what we may prefer to do is use our mouse or our keyboard to select one statement as opposed to the others that we might type here in the query window, and then select the execute button, which will give us just the results from the highlighted query. We could also use F5 on our keyboard, or my favorite, Control E, to execute the query. Now let's just take a moment and point out some of the things that we just did, because actually there's quite a bit that's going on here. First of all, over here in the available databases combo box, you can see all the databases that are available in a given instance of SQL Server that we're currently connected to. You can see that instance displayed here within the tab. If you hover over the tab, you can see the full, fully qualified, I guess you would call it, name of the server, the instance, the database, and then the query window itself. And you can have multiple query windows open at the same time. And although it's difficult to see because of the lack of real estate, you have multiple tabs, and you can see all of the available query windows by selecting them from this little drop-down menu here. Each one of these tabs can be connected to a different data source completely. So for example, this one, although they happen to be connected to the same instance, they could be connected to completely different servers and completely different instances of SQL Server. Each tab has two parts. It has the query editor itself, where we'll type in our DDL and our DML, our Transact SQL, and then a pane at the bottom which will give us the results and the messages, and also a third type of tab that we can show, which is the actual execution plan. And we'll probably not talk about execution plans in this series of videos, but an execution plan will give you the steps that SQL Server took to complete your query. So, for example, if you hover your mouse cursor over, it'll show you that it took a clustered index scan in order to retrieve our results, and the cost associated with performing this type of query. Now, honestly, I'm not a database administrator, so some of this information is lost on me. However, if you're trying to fine-tune your queries and your database table structure, you can use this information to debug and to fine-tune the performance of your queries and your database. And if you're ever asked to send along the execution plan, you can simply right-click on this tab and select Save Execution Plan As, and we can save it onto the desktop in this case, and then mail that to the database administrator or whoever's helping us out with our databases. Let's go back to the Results tab. You notice that the results are returned to us in a grid-like fashion, but we can change that. We can select to have our results returned to us in a text-like format. So let's rerun our query. Select everything there. There we go. And you can see that we have a more text-like version of our of our data. We can select a small portion of this, right-click and copy and paste it, or even save the results, or we can just deselect and save the entire results to a file if we wish to, or we can save directly to a file by selecting this Results to File button, and when we execute the query, it'll automatically pop open a Save Results dialog. Let's go ahead and just type in results. We can save it as type RPT, which is just a text format. So I'll save it to our desktop. We'll go over here and open this up. Using Notepad, you can see that we have all of our results, which can be very useful. Okay, so let's turn off the execution plan and let's move back to the results to grid. And there's really two occasions whenever I use Management Studio Express for long periods of time in the query window. One's when I'm beginning development, I want to input a bunch of test data, and I want to test my queries against that test data to make sure I'm pulling back the right source of information. These will form the stored procedures that I'll use later on, or the SQL that I'll embed directly into my code that I'm writing for my application. And then the second time is after I deploy the application, I may want to do some queries. In the case of a website, I may want to see sales or membership information, and so before I get my reporting in place, I might write a bunch of ad hoc queries to deliver information back to me, and just to kind of keep an eye on how the website is doing. So what I'll typically do is spend a couple hours writing queries to analyze the data that I've been collecting, and after I'm finished, I don't want to throw that away. I want to save those queries for a future point in time. So one of the easiest ways to do this is to select File, Save As, and so we might as you can see here, I've already used the name once, but I might type in Queries for New Development Software Project and select Yes to Overwrite. And then if I close down Management Studio and come back a couple days later, all I have to do is double-click the queries, connect to the database, and I'm back to where I was before. Also, while I'm typing in I can have several windows open at the same time. As I noted before, I can close windows fairly easily by just using the little scroll wheel that I have on my mouse, or if I have a third button, a middle button, I can just click once on the tab name and it'll close it down. So let's get back to this spot here. Also, I tend to write a lot of code and I want to comment some things out, so I can add comments by using two little dashes before whatever I'm typing up. This will give me some type of an indicator as to what this query is supposed to be doing. Also, if I want to get rid of queries and not accidentally run them, this is especially useful for update and delete statements. I can do that, just put two little lines in front of my statements. If I have multiple lines that I want to comment out, I can use this handy comment out the selected lines button on the toolbar, and then at some future point in time if I want to uncomment them out, I'll just use its neighbor, the uncomment the selected lines button, and I'm back in business. Okay, so if you're first getting started writing SQL statements, ad hoc queries, that are rather complex with multiple table joins, with complex where clauses and things of that nature. Or if you can't quite remember the syntax required to do an insert or an update or delete statement, don't fear, there's actually a great tool that can help you as you're getting started, and that is this button that says Design Query in Editor. It's the Query Designer. And what you can do is select some tables that you want to retrieve data from. So in this case, I'm going to select employee and employee address, and you can see that after I selected the tables that there's a representation of the tables here at the very top, and there's also some query syntax at the very bottom of the window. Let's add a couple more tables to make this even more complex. I just right-clicked in the white space and selected Add Table, and I'm going to select the contact and address as well. And I'll select close. Now you can see we have a pretty hairy example of a multi-table join here. And say, for example, I want to retrieve some information like, let's go first and last name and email address. We'll also select the person's title and birth date and their city and their postal code. Okay? You can see that it's created all the inner joins that's required to create this query. I can copy it and paste it into my query window and then try to run it. But let's make a more complicated query. Let's also make it where the birth date is greater than 1970, or let's this would be better if I did birth date would be greater than 1/1/1970, okay? And let's make it where we sort on postal code first and then last name second, okay? So now look at everything that has been generated for us. We can copy all of this. In fact, hold on, one more thing. Let's do this. Instead of postal code, let's call it zip code. Okay, because that's the form that we'll want it to come at. Let's copy all this, close this window, let's paste it in here, and with any luck, if we did this correctly, we're going to get a bunch of records back. And let's see if the birth dates, yes, they're all greater than 1970. That's very cool. And let's look at the order that they're arranged in. Looks like 84, 94, 98, and then within this 9804, let's take a look at their last names. Homer, Kim, H, K, L, M, R. Okay, so our query worked. Very complex. If we had to sit down and figure this out on our own, it would be very difficult. Let's try a different type of query. Let's just try to change some information in the contact table. So I'll select Add. And notice that you can select different types of information. Views, functions that might be defined ahead of time. Okay. But we're just going to stay with the contact. We're going to right-click and select Change Type to an Update Statement instead of a Select Statement. And this time, I'll take a different tact whenever I'm selecting the columns that I'm going to update. I'm going to select it here from the grid view. So we'll update the first name, middle name, and last name. And we'll select the contact ID where it equals contact ID 123, and let's put in some new values here. So Bob T. Tabor. Okay, I'm going to copy this update statement and paste it in here, and with any luck this will actually work. Excellent. And now, just to make sure this query actually worked, I'm going to just do a quick select from person.contact where contact ID equals 123, and you can see first, middle, and last name have been adjusted for that row in the database. Great. So just the moral of the story here is that if you're not feeling comfortable with writing your own queries, you can use the query designer to help you out. Okay, so it's great for developing ad hoc queries, but what if you need to do things like administrative chores, like you want to script out the creation of logins, and you want to script out create a stored procedure, and you're not sure if you remember the exact syntax for that? Well, you can use something called the Template Explorer button right here on the toolbar, and it has a bunch of templates for things like creating triggers if you don't remember the syntax for that, or creating views, things like creating logins, restoring databases. All of this can be done purely from script. And so I'm going to use, as an example of this, this create stored procedure basic template. I'm just going to double click it. It'll ask me, you know, the connection information for the database that I'm going to ultimately create this for. And so this fine, we're just going to create it here. And I'm going to select the database that I want this to be applied to. And it has a basic template for specifying the name of a new stored procedure, so the schema and the name, for the input parameters, for actually even a test to execute it and to see what the values would be. Okay, so you could go in and like highlight these and change them, but there's actually an even easier way to use that. It might not seem very obvious at first, but there's this little utility here. Specify values for template parameters, which pops open a little dialog that allows you to fill in the names for the scheme of the procedure, for the parameters, and even for your testing purposes as well. So let's call this like sales, and the stored procedure will be sales forecast by date range, something like that. And then we can create the parameters. So we'll do something like begin date. It'll be of type datetime, and we'll default it to a function called getDate, which will give us today's date. And the second parameter might be endDate, okay? And that'll be a date time as well. And the default value for parameter would be, we'll just do getDate as again. These are just default values. And then we can specify values that we want to use to test this query. So in this case, I might do something like 8/1/2001 to 8/15/2001, and then I'll click OK. And you can see that it creates it replaces all the little templated areas with the values that I typed in. So first of all, it'll drop any stored procedures if the stored procedure by the same name already exists. It creates a new stored procedure using the schema and the name that we specified. It creates the parameters with the data types and the default values that we specified. And we're going to have to fill in the rest. I mean, we're going to have to write our own select statements and all that kind of stuff. Of course, then we could employ our query designer here if we wanted to. But then at the very end of this, it allows us to execute that stored procedure. And you remember these values? These were the test values that I typed in that little specify value for the template parameter dialog. So that is very neat. And you can use these templates for so many different purposes. It even has this handy little area below that keeps a list of the recently used templates. So if you wanted to create another, you know, just have a list of favorites here, that's certainly possible. Okay, so the last thing that I'm going to talk about might be perhaps the most important thing that you need to know how to do whenever you're working with database data, and that is how to back up and restore your databases. So let's get rid of some things here. Let's close everything down. And we'll go back to the Object Explorer, and I'm going to look at my databases, and I'm going to right-click on the AdventureWorks database and select Tasks, and I want to back up my database. And I see the Backup Database dialog. I can select the type of backup I want to do right now, whether I want to do a full backup, which means I'm going to back up every bit of data, or just a differential, and that will only back up the items since the last time that I backed up the data. Okay, so we'll select full for this time. We can also specify a backup set, and this is a little bit more of a advanced feature, but basically if you have multiple devices like multiple tape drives to save your backups, you can either speed up the backing up by writing to multiple tape drives at the same time. You can specify what data goes where, on what drives, on what dates, and things of that nature. So if you have a more complex backup scenario than just what we have here, which is just saving to your hard drive, then please refer to the help files for more information about backup sets. But basically, the one thing I will say about creating a backup is that it's a good idea to back up your database to a different physical drive than where your original data resides. So you can see in this case, I'm backing up merely to the C drive. Ideally, I'd back up to D if I had a second hard drive in this machine, or if I didn't, I'd be very diligent about copying this backup file, adventureworks.back, once it gets created, diligent about copying that to another location, whether it be to a DVD or copy it online or something along those lines. So once we've set most of the initial options, we can select the OK button. And you can see the progress over here on the left-hand side. So I'm going to pause the recording of the video while it finishes up. Well, actually, it's almost done. Okay, excellent. So we get the message that it backed up successfully. If I wanted to find this file on my file system, I'm going to go to my C drive, Program Files, SQL Server. I happen to know that it's in this MS SQL 3 for the third instance of SQL Server I have on this box. And there's a backup folder, and you can see here it is, AdventureWorks. Okay, so very cool. Now, what happens when I need to restore the database? Well, all we got to do is just right-click and select Tasks, Restore Database. And for the most part, I can just keep the default settings. It saves where the last backup was stored to, so there's really not a lot I need to do here unless I really made some dramatic changes to where I put the backup. But essentially, here I'm going to restore the backup. Now, any of the changes that I made to the data between the time I made the backup and the restore will be lost. So you only want to use these in extreme cases. And one other point that I'd like to make before we conclude the section is that you always want to test your backups to make sure that they are actually indeed working. The worst time to find out that a backup didn't actually work is when you need it the most. There's one final administrative task that I'll show you how to do, but Microsoft recommends that you do this judiciously and not just at a whim, and that is to shrink your database. So I'm going to right-click on AdventureWorks and select Tasks and Shrink Database. And the idea behind shrinking a database is basically that as you add data to your database, and if you've created the database in such a way that it would automatically grow, then the size is going to expand over time. At some point, you might realize that I don't need most of this data, I can get rid of it. So you delete it out of your database, paring it down to maybe only a couple of months worth of data as opposed to years and years worth of data. So all this space that used to be consumed by data is now kind of like an empty balloon, and the file size is large, but there's really nothing in the file. So at that point, you could shrink your database. Now, the caveat to that is this: if you have auto grow turned on and you repeatedly shrink your database, you're just going to be releasing and then reconsuming the same disk space. So it really doesn't make sense in that scenario. So you should really only use this operation if you've permanently removed large amounts of data and you don't expect your database to grow back to that size, or if you want to compress your data for storage and there's just so much data that it isn't all going to fit on a CD or a DVD or whatever the case might be, then it might make sense to shrink your database at that point. But this can be very I/O intensive, and as a result, it's not recommended that you do this very often. At any rate, if this is something you did want to do, you can pretty much select all the default options here. You can even select reorganize the files. You can specify the maximum free space that you want to allow to be in the files after the shrinking. Ideally, you shouldn't change too many of these options, but I wanted to at least explain what shrink was. And so that concludes this video. We've covered a lot of material in a very short period of time. Everything from registering a server, connecting to instances of SQL Server within the Object Explorer, detaching and attaching to databases, using the Object Explorer, scripting things out to the query window, how to use the query window and all the different panes and all the different tabs that are involved with that, how to save data off and the queries off to the file system, how to open them back up, how to basically use the query window to write ad hoc queries, how to execute them. We talked about what an execution plan was and how to save that execution plan off and save it and send it off to somebody else on your team. We talked about the Query Designer and the Template Explorer, and then also some administrative tasks with backing up and restoring the database. So a lot of material that we covered here. And the moral of the story is that SQL Server Management Studio Express is a very elegant tool that allows you to administer your databases, allows you to create queries on an ad hoc basis. Even if you're not really good at writing queries just yet, it gives you the tools to help you be very effective in a very short period of time. In many cases, it gives you visual designers to help reduce the learning curve. But if you need the power of getting to the actual DML and DDL transact SQL script, you can do that as well. And we demonstrated all these things throughout this video. So hope you enjoyed it. Thank you.